أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين وعلى أصحابه وعلى جميع الأنبياء والمرسلين. قال الله تعالى في القرآن المجيد والفرقان الحميد: أولم يسيروا في الأرض فينظروا كيف كان عاقبة الذين من قبلهم كانوا أشد منهم قوة وآثار الأرض وعمروها أكثر مما عمروها وجاءتهم رسلهم بالبينات فما كان الله ليظلمهم ولكن كانوا أنفسهم يظلمون. صدق الله العلي العظيم. وقال النبي حبيبنا المصطفى صلوات الله وسلامه عليه وعلى أهل بيته وأصحابه: إياكم والغلو، فإنما أهلك من كان قبلكم الغلو، أو كما قال: صدقت يا رسول الله. In the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful, all praise is due to our Creator, our Cherisher, our Nourisher, and our Sustainer. We bear witness there's none worthy of worship but Allah. We bear witness we believe in all the prophets who came in the great line of divine. And we bear witness that Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa ashabihi wa sallam, is the final of all the emissaries of Allah. Respected elders, ulama, huffaz, teachers, principals, students, elders and young ones, I greet you with the Islamic universal greeting of peace at this auspicious time of Jumu'ah in this beautiful house of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. We also welcome many guests who are here for various weddings of prominent families, and we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make their stay here a joyful one, inshallah. We are living in a time in history which seems increasingly to move towards extremism. Whether political extremism or religious extremism. And this is a worrying phenomenon which could eventually victimize all of us and also scar our future generations. Extremism, whether radicals, religious radicals, whether conspiracy theorists, whether bigots or racists or xenophobes, extremism is born in the deep insecurity that comes from an intolerant perspective, which sees the world not as a spectrum of colors with a variety of understanding, but rather sees the world in terms of black and white and perhaps a bit of gray. Extremists have unquestioned certainty about their position, that they consider their perspective and their view as absolutely and completely true. But not only that, they do that to the exclusion of other views. Many people feel certain about what they feel, but to the exclusion of others, going on to great lengths to defend their stance, but more than that, accusing others in the political field as unpatriotic, those who differ with them, and in religious circles, those who differ with them as being heretics or as being deviant. And in this way, whether politically or religiously, extremists have the tendency to legitimize the opposition, their demonizing or the attack on those whom they differ with or those who challenge them. It's an increasing phenomenon, and I'll explain that both in political, internationally as well as locally, and religiously as well, internationally and locally. Extremists are preoccupied with their so-called opponents or detractors. You'll find so much effort has gone into some specific matter to the exclusion of other major matters. They often display open hostility to those who differ with their perspective and may use vile language in their talk when they disagree, or they may blame others for the ills of the world. Everything is someone else's fault. But in gentler form and more regularly nowadays, they use sarcasm in their attacks. The intention is the same: to demean and belittle those who differ. An extremist, though, doesn't easily allow himself or herself to have empathy with those whom they disagree with. They don't see them as complete human beings in the way, if you want, because they undermine their aspirations, their need, their understandings that they may have. And this opens the door to intolerance and hatred rather than compassion. You see, extremists are only successful when people are desperate. Contented people aren't attracted to extremism. But desperate people will follow anyone who offers a seeming way out of the prevailing difficulty. The danger and the concern is that extremism is on the increase at the highest level. On the world stage, the election of Donald Trump to the American presidency is a political disaster that could result in a global catastrophe. He has expressed open feelings of racism, of xenophobia, global warming denialism, a man who does not have the temperament of any kind for public political office, a billionaire with appalling ethics and no regard for the truth, and certainly no respect for difference of opinion. He placed the ban on 7 Muslim majority countries, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Yemen, Somalia and Sudan. None of these countries have ever committed or been charged with terrorism on American soil. In fact, of the 9/11 attackers, the 19 of them who are alleged to be involved, 15 from Saudi Arabia, 2 from the Emirates, 1 from Egypt, 1 from Lebanon, none of them are on the list. Makes you think, doesn't it? Trump, who's anti-immigration, but you need to understand, it's not about Trump, it's about the mentality of extremism. And here is a man who holds the most powerful political office in the world, whether we like it or not. The most powerful political office in the world. And he has impact on the world and how it unfolds and events unfold in the world. Be very clear about this. It's not insignificant. But I'm using him as an example to understand at the highest level in the world, so-called, this is happening. What do you think is happening at the lower levels? He's anti-immigration, but a president of a country of immigrants. Anti-immigration, but he is a president of a country made of immigrants. He seems to disdain anything foreign, yet he wears an Italian suit, a shirt made from Bangladeshi cotton, stands behind an IKEA podium made in Sweden, with a bulletproof Saint-Gobain glass made in France, reading his speech of a 4K Sony projector teleprompter, which is made in Japan, flashing a Rolex watch, which is made in Switzerland, standing next to his wife, who's from Slovenia, giving a lecture in Arizona, which is land stolen by Americans, stolen from the Mexicans. So much for being all American. But now, he is in a political position of the most powerful man on the planet. And there's no doubt about that. Politically. But he's not alone. And that's the danger. He's also part of a more contemporary wave of right-wing extremists, neo-fascists, authoritarian populists, who have been elected to power by their people. For example, Narendra Modi in India, Benjamin Netanyahu in occupied Palestine, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Egypt, and also there are people who may potentially come to power, politicians like Nigel Farage in Britain, Marine Le Pen in France, and Geert Wilders in Holland. Some of them are even worse. And this wave of right-wing, sometimes neo-fascist, authoritarian populism is usually organized around charismatic people who say the right thing seemingly, pretending to be on the side of people, but with prejudice, blaming vulnerable groups, often ethnic or religious minorities, for everything that goes wrong in their country. Coming closer to home, South Africa, like many countries in the world, are in a very dangerous juncture. We are also confronting authoritarian populism in South Africa. Both Jacob Zuma and Malema are examples of these. They all present themselves as men of people, of the people, and they have alarmingly authoritarian tendencies. In our country, just recently, 94 psychiatric patients died of negligence, and corpses of psychiatric patients were found with head injuries, unexplained bruises. Relatives were informed about the deaths of their loved ones, and the transfer of these mentally ill patients was seemingly due to business opportunities. We live in a divided country. Social cohesion is wonderful, but it's not the reality. And while the middle class matters, and they talk about endlessly about race, class is the central divide in our society, what Robert Sobukwe very often spoke about. Certainly race is an important issue, but class, not race, determines people's life chances. The Marikana massacre has brought this reality home to many. It has blown our political discourse into fragments. How can we talk so easily about race as a central issue in our society when the mine in Marikana has made Cyril Ramaphosa a multi-billionaire? Or when Kulubese Zuma grows fat of the Aurora mines while workers at that mine, of all races, begin to starve after months without pay? How can we talk so easily about trade unions as the defenders of the workers when workers at Marikana are just as angry with the National Union of Mine Workers as they are with their bosses? How does this extreme, another form of extremism, how does this extreme situation persist in our country, which fought a noble struggle against discrimination and injustice, and where so many bravely offered their lives? We are in this mosque, Masjid al-Furqan, on Imam Harun Road. Imam Harun, he was one of those who gave his life in the name of Allah for the cause of the struggle. The struggle has been somewhat betrayed. More than two decades after our first democratic elections, we are still living in the most unequal country in the world. We struggle for equality, yet remain unequal. We replaced corrupt extreme racists who were imposed upon us, and now we are dealing with self-serving corrupt leaders that we have chosen. Coming to the Muslim situation, there's a disturbing trend of a rising phenomena of neo-literalists amongst Muslims, specifically among young Muslims, coming from particular quarters, who incline to rigidity and excessiveness in the understanding and implementation of faith, sticking closely to the very literal meaning as they understand it, ignoring other necessary factors of legal deduction and deeper connotation of the text, about the context, the original context, and importing that context into a contemporary context. Ignoring varying perspectives of scholars throughout history who held various understandings, and contrary to the very spirit of Islamic imperative of flexibility, of facilitation, and of simplicity and accommodation. Have these extremists self-righteousness blinded themselves? Have their self-righteousness blinded them to the acknowledged Islamic legacy of agreement on the permissibility to disagree? Part of Islamic legacy is an agreement on the permissibility to disagree. Just because something, by the way, is done in the name of religion or Sharia, be very careful of this. Very often people bandy about names, use a slogan, throw a takbir, doesn't make it Islamic. Just because something is done in the name of religion or in the name of Sharia does not make it Islamic. Sharia, you see, Sharia is not about hate. It's not about punishment. Many Muslims, they say, mashallah, Muslim country. Why? They cut off the head of the thief. That's no proof of Sharia. Sharia is when you remove the need to steal. When you have all the thieves in parliament and they cut off the hands of the thief, it's not Sharia. It is the thieves cutting the hands of smaller thieves. Sharia is not about hate. It's about not about punishment or about vengeance, about killing. Rather, Sharia is all about human goodwill, about justice for all, about positive universal values. The values and principles of the Sharia have been clearly enunciated and stated and reiterated throughout Islamic history. Ibn al-Qayyim, in his Al-I'lam al-Mu'awwiqin on Rabb al-Alameen, said, and listen to what he said, this is centuries ago, and he's an extremely orthodox scholar with very, very, very strict perspective on how he sees things. Yet he said, فَإِنَّ الشَّرِيعَ مَبْنَاهَا وَأَسَاسُهَا عَلَى الْحِكَمُ وَمَصَالِحِ الْعِبَادِ الْمَعَاشِ وَالْمَعَادِ وَهِيَ عَدْلٌ كُلُّهَا وَرَحْمَةٌ كُلُّهَا وَمَصَالِحْ كُلُّهَا وَحِكْمَةٌ كُلُّهَا فَكُلُّ مَسْأَلَةٍ خَرَجَتْ عَنِ الْعَدْلِ إِلَى الْجَوْرِ وَعَنِ الرَّحْمَةِ إِلَى ضِدِّهَا وَعَنِ الْمَصْلَحَةِ إِلَى الْمَفْسَدَةِ وَعَنِ الْحِكْمَةِ إِلَى الْبَعْثِ فَلَيْسَتْ مِنَ الشَّرِيعَةِ. Verily, he says, the Sharia is founded upon wisdom and welfare for the servants, for the people of the human beings in the life and in the hereafter. Sharia in its entirety is justice. In its entirety it is mercy. In its entirety it is a benefit. And its entirety is based on wisdom. Every matter which abandons justice, every matter which promotes tyranny, every matter which opposes mercy, every matter that supports cruelty, every matter that denies benefit, every matter that promotes corruption, and every matter that promotes foolishness can never be part of Sharia, irrespective of how you try to interpret it. So in other words, justice for all, mercy, welfare of humankind, wisdom in the implementation, that is what Sharia is about. More than that, for those who don't like Ibn al-Qayyim al-Jawzi, because of his perspective, Imam al-Ghazali on the other perspective. He derived the core values of the maqasid, or the objectives of Sharia. And he said, نعني بالمسحلة المحافظة على مقصود الشرع ومقصود الشرع من الخلق خمسة ويحفظ عليهم دينهم وأنفسهم وعقلهم ونسلهم ومالهم. Imam Ghazali writes, المستصفى by مصلحة, the purpose of the objective is مصلحة of Sharia. By this we mean the protection of the objectives of Sharia, which are five: protection of religion, protection of life, protection of property, of intellect, and of the family. So with these kind of, it's not new stuff. It's old stuff. Because some students come now, recent graduates, as if they've now found Sharia, that all the people who came before them haven't read all these books. Where do some among us come with the notion of hating those who disbelieve? They have their choice. لَكُمْ دِينُكُمْ وَلِيَدِينَ. They have their choice. وَقُلِ الْحَقُّ مِنْ رَبِّكُمْ فَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيُؤْمِنْ وَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيَكْفُرْ. Quranic verse, not hadith. The truth is from Allah. Those who want to accept, they are welcome to accept. And those who want to reject are welcome to reject. That's their choice. And they must bear the consequence of their choice. But their freedom to choose is theirs. La ikraha fid deen. La ikraha, it's a compulsion. And by the way, because you may think it's misquoting the verse or misappropriating the verse, this verse was revealed, as explained before. It was revealed when some Muslims came to Medina and they found the Medinan people, to safeguard their children, send them to Jewish school and Jewish institutions and Jewish hostels, so to say. So the children became Judaized. In other words, they followed the Jewish tradition. When Islam came, when Rasulullah came, some of these people in Medina now became Muslim. So they wanted to force their children, who are now big, 18, 19, 20, 21, independent children, they wanted to force them now to come back to Islam. And this verse was revealed to ban Muslim parents from forcing their children to leave Judaism to come to Islam. This is the context of the revelation. Any school of thought, you can check up the Asbabun Nuzul. So I'm not misquoting, trying to make like Rafid Deen and taking somewhere and look at the connotation, the direct original context of the revelation. So, where do some of us come with the notion of hating those who disbelieve, destroying those who differ, having suspicion of those within our faith who may have an alternate perspective? Not only do we wrongfully hate the kafir, but we also consider the sowing of seeds of suspicion regarding other Muslims who differ. Allama Iqbal put it very beautifully. He said, Shajar hai firqe, shajar hai firqa araya, tu'assub hai, تعصب ہے سمر اس کا. He said, شجر ہے فرقہ آرائے, تعصب ہے سمر اس کا. He says, these divisions are the branches of a tree. Its fruit, which you see, is manifested through extremism. You see, reactionary extremists do not want any pluralism. It's their way or no other way. What is right is the way they see it. They play God themselves. Even God doesn't have an alternate view except what they think God says. So you can't tell them what you think, what your scholar says. No. God dare not say anything other than they think what God says. So they have a monopoly over the voice of Allah, the words of Allah. That in itself is much greater sin than any bid'ah you can form. They view the world in black and white, their self-righteous version of good and evil. They are right and good and everyone else is wrong, and those who oppose them are misguided. They have the monopoly of the truth. Truth is as they see it. You see, an incident, Yunus bin Abdul A'la is a contemporary of Imam Shafi. Some dispute exactly the content and the detail, but nonetheless, the wisdom we can learn. Imam Shafi'i spoke one day, and one of this Yunus Ibn Abdul A'la was upset by something Imam Shafi'i said, student, and he walked out. Imam Shafi'i went to his home according to some reports, but the wisdom is important. The wording is not always exactly accurate. Imam Shafi'i, ya Yunus, tajamma'na mi'a al-mas'ail wa tafarruqna al-mas'ala. He said, oh Yunus, he went to his house. The student differed with the sheikh, walked out. He's supposed to be the rude one. Shafi'i went to him. He says, oh Yunus, you know, we agree on hundreds of issues, we differ on small things. لا تحاول انتصار في كل اختلاف فأحيانا كسب القلوب أولى من كسب المواقف ولا تهدم الجسور التي بنيتها وعبرتها فربما تحتاج إليها للعودة يوما ما دائما أكره الخطأ لكن لا تكره المخطئ أبغض بكل قلبك المعصية لكن سامح وارحم العاصي انتقد القول لكن احترام القائل فإنما هتنا هي أن نقضى على المرض لا على المرضى. أو يونس, we agree on so much and disagree on so little. Don't try to be triumphant and win every argument when there's a difference. Sometimes winning hearts is more important than winning an argument. We lose millions of people, but we won our argument. Sometimes winning hearts, Imam Shafi said, is more important than winning the argument. Don't demolish bridges that you have built and crossed, because someday you may need them again. Always hate what is wrong, but never hate the one who does the wrong. Hate sin with all your heart, but forgive and have mercy on the one who is sinful. Criticize speech, but don't be insulting to the speaker. Our job, like the doctor, is to cure the sick one, to cure the ailment, treat vigorously the ailment, but not to oppose the one who is sick. That's why the Rasul said, حُرِّمَ عَلَى النَّارِ كُلُّ هَيِّنْ لَيِّنْ سَهْلٌ قَرِيبٌ من الناس. The fire is forbidden, the Rasul said. It's haram for the fire to touch the person. Hadith in the Musnad of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal. حرم على النار كل هين لين سهل قريب من الناس. The fire is forbidden for that person who is kind, who is gentle, who is easygoing, and who is loving towards other people. To people, not to Muslims. قريب من الناس, to people. You see, the believers are intended to be an ummah, a community that serves as a standard, as a model for others. Ummata wasata litakunu shuhada ala nas, that you can be a testimony, a symbol, and a standard for other people. It is the absence of this standard, this balance, this wasata, wasatiya, provided by this Islamic adala, this balance and justice, that extremism creeps in. And that's why you find ghulu, excessiveness, tanattu', harshness, tashaddud, severity, tatarruf, extremism creeping in all its forms. And the Rasul warned in the hadith documented by Imam al-Nisa'i, إِيَّاكُمْ وَالْغُلُوْ فَإِنَّمَا أُهُلِكَ مَنْ كَانَ قَبْلَكُمَ الْغُلُوْ. I warn you regarding extremism, because communities before you were destroyed because of the extremism. And he warned thrice in another hadith documented by in the Sahih of Imam Muslim, where he said, هَلَكَ الْمُتَنَطِّعُونَ أَلَا هَلَكَ الْمُتَنَطِّعُونَ. Extremists are destroyed. Extremists are destroyed. Extremists are destroyed. So these are strange times. A world in which a crazy Trump has finger on the nuclear button. Where the Guptas have their hands in the national treasury. Where Muslim fanatics have their guns pointed at other Muslims. All the wars being fought at present. All of them. Don't tell me who's behind it. Because we are fools for falling for the trick. So we are guilty. All wars being fought on the world now at the present, all of them are fought on Muslim lands, and all of them fought are between Muslim against Muslim. Something is seriously wrong. Never mind who you blame. The fact that we allow ourselves even to be used by others, it's still our fault. Muslim fanatics have their guns pointed at other Muslims. These are dangerous times indeed. And if we allow such norms to set, we will never be able to undo them. We're living in the age of enlightenment, but it's the age of extremism. The two doesn't match. Extremism and oppression is dhulm, and enlightenment is light. Noor and dhulumat is opposed. Light and darkness is opposed. Righteousness and injustice is opposed. How does this two come together in this age? Enlightenment on the one hand, and extremism on the other. It is a paradox. If we do not have, and I'm making this very, very clear. If we do not have the sense to realize the need to stem the tide of intolerance, we and our children will be drowned in the blood of extremism. I repeat, if we do not have the sense, politically and religiously by the way, to realize the need to stem the tide of intolerance, we and our children will be drowned in the blood of extremism. The preponderance of violence in the name of Islam, growing interfaith resentment, intra-faith intolerance, this is not part of wasatiyah. What we need at this time of global crisis, we need leadership in the style of Rasulullah. Not quoting the Prophet, not looking like the Prophet only, not only singing for the Prophet, but doing what the Prophet actually did. Leadership that is vibrant in thought, articulate in expression, warm in engagement, relevant in message, courageous in action, revolutionary in approach, embracing in methodology, compassionate in objective. Leadership that serves as a catalyst for positive change is constructive rather than destructive. Connecting rather than disconnecting. Resolving conflict rather than escalating clashes. Offering optimism rather than pessimism. Harmonizing rather than polarizing. A leadership that is relevant, practical, realistic, and pragmatic. I leave you with a reminder that our task as Ummah and Wasata, balanced community, is exceptionally urgent. The imperative to confront all extremism, internally and externally, to challenge all forms of bigotry and discrimination, and ensure fulfilling the Sharia objectives of the protection of all human dignity. I leave you with a reminder of a hadith which I quote. If I give 10 khutbahs a year in this mosque, 8 times I will quote this hadith. And I want you to be indoctrinated by this hadith. Hadith documented by Imam al-Bayhaqi, where the Rasul said, never forget it. Imbibe this hadith into our psyche, into our mentality, and try to live by it. He said, al-Muslim, with all the definitions, whether you're Sunni, Sufi, Salafi, whatever names we give ourselves, which are completely irrelevant. Al-Muslim, man salim al-Muslimuna min lisanihi wa yadi. A Muslim is that person from whose words and actions other Muslims are safe. By that definition, see if you are a Muslim. I must see whether I am Muslim. No matter how much I read and how much khutbah I give and how much Quran I know and qira'ah and qasida, I must judge for myself, and I ask you to do the same. Do I fulfill this criteria? Never mind I make salah 7 times a day, we go for hajj every year. Ask yourself, do we fulfill this criteria as well of hadith? Because the hadith is together in Bayhaqi, but it's separate also in Sahih Muslim. Al-Muslim, man salim al-Muslimun min lisani wa yadi. A Muslim, by definition, is the one from whose words and deeds all other Muslims are safe. وَالْمُؤْمِنُ مَنْ أَمِنَهُ النَّاسِ بِدِمَائِهِمْ وَأَمْوَالِهِمْ وَأَنفُسِهِمْ. And a mu'min is the one in whom humanity at large finds safety and security regarding their life, their honor, and their property. May Allah save us from the self-righteousness of the extremist. And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us kind of kindness and compassion. Inna Allah rafiqun yuhibbu rifqa fil amri kulli. Allah is kind and gentle, loves kind and kindness and gentleness in everything. Wa yu'ti ala rifq ma la yu'ti al unuf. Allah has granted the capacity for kindness and compassion to attain those things which violence and extremism could never accomplish. Aqulu qawli hadha wa astaghfirullah wa assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.